Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your morning glass of chocolate milk of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica. I will probably stand. Yeah. Now I understand why performers get big heads. Don't do that. Don't do that, because then I'm going to start being sympathetic to the people I write about, and we don't want that. That's bad. We're here. We're at Gertie. First of all, clap for Gertie. Yeah. For real. And Nate, who have been good enough to allow us use of the space and put together classroom seating so that everybody can be here to ask questions, et cetera, et cetera. I'm joined by my colleagues, my brother and my sister. Joe Coscarelli is here.
I'm here.
Karen Gans is here.
Thank you.
Can I just have a show of hands? If you support Gans Corps emotionally or spiritually, can I just... Thank you. This is... Karen...
That was a lot of hands.
And not, mine did not go up. But that's okay. But, like, we know...
No, there's no Caramonica Corps.
No. Well... So we are going to talk today about some of the new faces of 2022... and then come back later and do a Q&A session with all of y'all. I'm extremely excited because we're going to talk about some people that we have not spoken about on Popcast thus far. Everybody up on Ice Spice? Who's up on Ice Spice?
It's going to be louder next month and then louder the month after that and then louder the month after that.
It is maybe the biggest drill billboard record that's not Pop Smoke. Kind of, it will become.
You think Munch is going to cross over?
I think Munch. I mean, it was 36 on the chart this week. I mean, I think it's going to cross over.
You think it can hit number one?
I think a remix with Cardi B could hit number one. Okay, so Ice Spice is from the Bronx. The Bronx is obviously one of the scenes that has a tremendous drill renaissance going on right now. Ice Spice was tapped by Drake recently.
To come hang out in Toronto?
Yeah, just a vibe in Toronto. Which
Drake. Definition of a Munch? In a way that I think he might own.
Honestly?
You don't think so?
Truly no comment. Okay. Truly no comment. But yes. So this record, one of the things I really like so much about this record is we have come to think of drill as like deeply frenetic in terms of both the production and also the way the rapping interacts with the production, which is often in conflict with the production. Ice Spice, both as a rapper and also this beat, there's something kind of like condensed and relaxed about it. It's very in the pocket, and she's almost like standing at a distance from the beat. Where are you at on this?
I want to know, Karen, did you listen to this when John put it on playlist?
You're implying that I don't listen to the songs on our own playlist?
I think you do, but I could imagine you skipping John's sometimes.
No, a little known fact is I put them in like a very specific order.
Took me like 3 years to figure that out, yeah. Just for the record.
Yeah, Karen
makes a playlist.
Like as an actual playlist.
Karen builds it like a playlist.
But I want you to enjoy, like the songs should be flowing into each other. So I do listen to all of them. I did like it. Okay. I enjoyed your blurb the most because you talked about like the flavor of a new piece of slang in your mouth.
Like that's the thing is like sometimes I think when you're writing about records a lot, you tend to get a little desensitized to words. You just hear them in so many, you know, you hear them in so many different contexts and it takes someone to like jolt you out of that. And when I heard Munch for the first time, I was like, oh, people are going to be running this into the ground 3 months from now. Like Bama Rush Munch talks. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, we're right on the edge of that. It's going to be brutal. I apologize in advance for everything that's about to happen.
So I was sold on Munch right away. The video, great playground video,
great video.
Classic New York vibe. But what really sold me on Ice Spice as an artist in general is Dan, shout out to Dan.
Shout out, Dan.
Pointed out that she has a song where she raps over Clarity by Zedd.
Yeah.
And which is like sample drill, but like, and that is like the frenetic sort of like clashing beat, but she still figures it out. And just like, basically everyone should rap over Zedd sometimes.
I was in the car recently and I was just playing like every Ice Spice song that's on Spotify, just
which is like what, like six?
Seven or something. But there's one and the name is escaping me where like the hook is like he wanted to send me an Uber. I look like in an Uber. And I was like, same. Like, honestly, same. Like, please don't catch me. If you ever catch me in an Uber, you know I'm lacking. You know I'm slipping. It's really f***ed up.
You like to drive.
I do.
That's because John drives everywhere.
I do. Not, unfortunately, my car's in the shop. But what are you going to do? Shit happens. So Ice Spice would be the first person. We didn't banter very much, though.
You want to go back?
I know.
I feel like we should banter.
How was your day?
Honestly, my day was a little bit gut-wrenching, to be frank. Like, anticipation about this event. I mean, look at this. Look at the responsibility in our hands. Look at this. It's very overwhelming. But I did get to pick a nice outfit. I'm really, really happy about.
Tell us about your shirt.
I would love to tell you about my shirt. I'm so glad that you asked.
This is preordained.
That's okay. So this is from either one of Virgil's last collection, the Louis Vuitton. And the story that's funny about this is, as some of you may know, I went to Memphis recently to hang out with Moneybagg Yo. And most of the day when I was with him, he was wearing all Louis Vuitton, but like very conventional, like kind of like a gray knit t-shirt, some like black shorts, like, you know, matching LV trainers, like very straightforward.
I feel like you're at the wrong podcast right now.
It's New York Fashion Week.
It's New York Fashion Week, people. Okay. And it was a very conventional outfit. And I was like, okay, you know, it's like, I hate to say it, but like a little bit like beginner, a little entry level. Little rapper 101, right? That's fine. That's cool. If I had a lot of money, I'd probably dress rapper 101 too. It's no problem. And then we get to the venue for the concert and I don't see him. And until he comes out on stage like 3 hours later and he's wearing this exact shirt. And I felt like kind of like, all right, we're, you know, I had it sitting at home waiting for this moment to unleash it on the 100 people in this room. You're welcome. I'm sorry. I don't know how everybody feels about it. Anyway, I felt real kindred spirit.
Get a show of hands. Who likes this shirt?
Yeah,
be
who
honest.
Likes this shirt? Wow.
All right. You I see some hands down. He says it's mid. This guy says it's mid.
You said it's mid? He says mid. Okay, that's no problem. Joe wasn't expecting that many hands to be raised, but that's okay. It's totally fine. Next time I'll buy the all black one.
Now we're talking.
Karen, how was your day?
I was going to say, we haven't seen each other and done podcast in person in
we
like 2 years.
We haven't seen Pedro in person. First of all, shout out Pedro.
Thank you.
I see Pedro on camera every week for a few moments. We tend to go camera off, but I do see Pedro every week. I have not seen Pedro in person in more than 2 years, and we're still here providing incredibly high quality content for you every week.
And that's thanks to Pedro.
Yeah, incredible. Shout out Pedro.
You're making me blush. You're making me blush.
That's the goal. That is the stated goal. Karen?
I was going to say, since we've been camera off for so long, you all don't know that I've been playing Word with Friends during podcast tapings for 2 years. Just during the slow parts where they're talking about Drake. Which is often.
My family members here. Sorry, this is my actual family. Yeah. Joe, you're in the office today, sort of.
I was in
metaphorically. Yeah.
I was in court in Queens with Cardi B.
Yeah. Another fan of Munch.
Another fan of Munch.
She posted a video along.
This is relevant. She pleaded guilty to some old assault charges from a strip club fight, maybe or maybe not involving her husband and some women in Queens, Angels, and Flushing. If you guys need something to do after this.
Speaking of Munches. Jeez.
She pleaded guilty, 15 days community service, no problem, will be discharged. But to celebrate, she got in the car and she filmed herself listening to Munch and then went to San Gennaro, I think.
No, not San Gennaro. Well, something else.
But San Gennaro just started, didn't it?
Oh, I thought it was in the Bronx. No?
Maybe. I don't know. She went to some street fair, got a sausage, got a funnel cake, and listened to Munch, which, like, I hope we all have that.
Honestly,
kind of
that's the exact night y'all are having right now. But you didn't have to plead guilty to an assault that I know of.
But yeah, colorful day at the office.
Colorful day.
Do you guys want to hear the Munch song?
Yeah, do you have
yeah.
it? Oh, yeah.
Are we just pulling up right now?
Yeah, I think we can.
Oh, yeah, do that.
Wow. It's about to be mayhem in here.
Stop playing with them, Ryan. You thought I was feeling you?
No.
That Munch. Either he ate it for lunch. Tell my baddie I get what I want. Like, you thought I was feeling you?
No, I was feeling you.
Then Munch. Yeah, either he ate it for lunch. Tell my baddie I get what I want. Like,
get what I want.
Same balance, keep it a beam. Know they be mad, I be on the scene. Ass too fat, can't fit in a jean. Use my stitch, but it's not what it seems. I got that ready, I'm keeping it clean.
Literally, when a remix comes out of this, it's over. It's genuinely over. Like, this is about to be like Hot 97 at like 12:20 p.m. This is gonna be like, you're going to go to Sweet Green. You're going to get a salad. You're going to turn on the radio, and they're going to be playing the Munch remix with Cardi B and Dua Lipa. That's literally like we're T-minus 4 weeks from that. So like enjoy this as your secret while you have it, because it's about to be very ugly. Should we talk about the night we had a couple, maybe like 3 nights ago or 4 nights ago?
Yeah.
Let's go. Joe and I were at the Bowery Ballroom. We were there to see Mother Cain, Ethel Cain. Yes.
You haven't done Ethel on podcast.
Why is there not Munch featuring Ethel Cain?
Yeah, it's going to be really slow and really long. Boy, is
it. Joe, you also went down to the Florida-Alabama border. One of the better date lines of the year, I think.
Yeah, Daleville, Alabama, I think it was.
I have not been. And on that story, you ate at Waffle House. Mm-hmm. And where was the other one?
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell. Karen, Joe, and myself have very similar culinary inclinations. There will be a snack episode of Popcast at some point, but to both eat at Waffle House and Taco Bell and include those in the story, that's like the hat trick.
And to expense them, right? Woo. Because when you're with an artist and you're like, order whatever you want
anything
at
you
Taco
want.
Bell, we're going nuts.
Smothered and covered and chunked. Just go crazy.
Yeah. So we took our Taco Bell to the local creek, and just like ate it under a bridge.
Tell us about your trip and your time with Ethel, because Ethel's basically the most important new artist of 2022.
I think one of the biggest breakouts, and will continue breaking out. I saw her in May at Market Hotel for her album release party. She put out this album, Preacher's Daughter, earlier this year. And that was like a great show, and the crowd was already very into it. She makes, you know, these sort of like Southern Gothic, post Lana, a little bit of Americana, a little bit of slowcore.
Yeah, Mazzy Star.
You know, she's from Florida, which is very meaningful to me. As I'm from Florida, I was immediately drawn to her iconography of like trashy South, basically.
Is anybody from Florida here? Is anybody here from Florida?
Just me.
Wow.
See, this is why it's special.
Nobody's admitting it.
No, it's quiet for the Sunshine State.
Because to make it out means something, right? To make it out means something. Like, people from Florida don't end up in New York that often.
I'm actually
like,
shocked.
People from New York end up in Florida.
I thought somebody.
I'm genuinely shocked.
She can do so many things already. She put out an EP called Inbred before the album. It has a song, Crush, which is just like a smash. And like, you know, you see people just light up when she plays it in concert, singing every line. And then she also makes these like epic, long, country-ish ballads where she just really makes you work for it. Like, but they build and build and build. She has a crazy voice. She makes all the music herself in her bedroom. And yeah, I just think she has a very bright career ahead of her.
Karen, I have a question about this, because this is something I feel like I think about a lot critically. When an artist like Ethel Cain makes records that, like, to our ear, essentially could be contemporary pop records. Like, obviously, you want to, like, tighten the production a tiny bit and maybe cut out, like, I don't know, 4 minutes out of the song. Whatever. I don't want to be picky. But broadly speaking, like making something that's in the field of contemporary pop, but like somehow it doesn't quite make the leap. Does that like ever get on? Like, I feel like it gets on my nerves a little bit because I'm always just like, I felt this about, no, truthfully, I felt this about Lil Peep, Nothing Nowhere, like that era of kind of like 2.0 SoundCloud guys. I was always sort of like, if you just slap these records on Z100 and kind of clean up the production and basically be fine. And instead what you end up with 3 years later is Machine Gun Kelly.
Let's listen to a tiny bit of Crush by FL King.
Okay, big facts. If that was a Halsey song, they'd be playing it on Z100 right now. Actually, that's not true because Halsey's not it. But anyway.
That's problematic, but we'll come around. We'll come around.
Halsey's album is Gans Corps.
Yes, my favorite album of the past few years.
I tried so hard with that record.
To the point you were just making, I think it really depends on the artist. Like, I felt Lil Peep was meant to be a pop star. But I don't know that Ethel Cain is psychologically built to be a pop star right now. And I think if you accelerated it like that, it would be problematic. And she might be a pop star for 20 minutes. And it would
killing
be
killing it on Twitter, though, right?
Killing
now.
It on Twitter. Killing very, it. Very, very.
Everybody
open.
Follow Ethel Cain on Twitter. I see you in the back. I see you. Ethel Cain, strong follow. Big recommend.
Strong follow. I think, yeah, the type of artist I tried to place her in the continuum of that I could see her career going is a sort of a Lana or a Tyler or a Florence.
Lord?
Florence had some hits,
Lord?
But just like some, but Lord. Lord is different because Lord's first song was a smash.
Cannot wait to see how things unravel for Ethel.
Yeah, I mean, so the other hit that she has is like American Teenager, which same way, it's like basically a Taylor Swift song, but it's a little too long. And one of our friends who was at the show with us, after she played it, he had never heard her before. He said, "Is this all over the radio?" Like he just couldn't believe that it was like an indie musician, essentially.
While we're talking about people who are resetting boundaries between like so-called indie and so-called pop, maybe this is time for me to talk about Zach Bryan.
Yeah, go in.
Is anybody up on Zach Bryan? Wow.
Not that many people.
Wow, we are really in the Northeast right now.
This is what I'll say. If there were more people from Florida here, they would know Zach
Bryan.
That is
absolutely true. Something in the Orange by Zach Bryan. Let's hear a little bit.
I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't. Cause if I say I miss you, I know that you won't. But I miss you in the morning.
That's Zach Bryan introducing Zach Bryan to 98% of the people in the room. Phenomenal. Okay, so Zach Bryan is a singer from Oklahoma who is, I would say, country adjacent. I feel like I'm maybe the only person in the room that listens extensively to contemporary country music. Any Bailey Zimmerman fans out there? Wow. Oh, great. Very excited to talk Bailey Zimmerman with people later tonight. people who are not myself in the mirror. So Zach Bryan's had kind of an unexpectedly big year. He's had a 35-song album debut in the top five of the Billboard chart, and then an EP that he recorded in 4 days also debut somewhere near the top five. By the time this episode comes out, there may be more about Zach Bryan that I have put out in the world. We shall see what the timing is like. But Zach's an interesting
Karen. Karen grits her teeth.
Yeah, yes.
I haven't seen the story yet.
Yes, I don't know who's looking at the other with a little bit more skepticism. So what's interesting to me about Zach Bryan from a genre perspective is I think there is this thing that's happening where you make music that sounds like that and then country people are kind of claiming you and saying, oh, no, he's one of us. But I can tell you, having spent a fair amount of time with him over the last couple months, actively rejecting that, wanting to move more in like a singer-songwriter folk, like sees himself in a Springsteen vein, not in a contemporary country vein, and almost to the point of not understanding why people would think of him that way.
You're drawn to guys like that.
I was going
to
say, isn't that Sturgill?
Sturgill.
And it's even Sam Hunt to a little bit.
Can we just all clap for Sam Hunt? I've never said a more meaningful thing in my entire life. That's incredible. I pray every day for Sam Hunt that he does something as good as Montevallo. I really do. It's the first thing I think about every morning. if you listen to the Zach Bryan album, which as I understand no one has, which is fine, it's very interesting how it limbs genre. And I think it's going to be a real challenge for him moving forward because the urge will be for radio stations.
They're going to want to make voters, him staple.
They're going to put, yeah, they're going to try to put him somewhere. And I can tell just that that's already chafing. And it was actually sort of refreshing. I mean, you mentioned Sturgill. I've interviewed Sturgill a few times over the years. Obviously, I'm drawn to people who kind of chafe against this kind of stuff. And I can tell that he's already chafing, which I think will make for a fairly fascinating next 12 months. It's funny you say that. They have not met, but they both have very similar backgrounds, both spent time in the Navy, and both are idiosyncratically pushing against what they want.
Sturgill's too busy trying to win an Oscar.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Sturgill is off grid right now. Texts are going to green. You know, it's a different energy right now. But I imagine the eventual Zach Bryan Sturgill Simpson duet is gonna burn.
Let's talk about Karen.
We'll talk about mine.
Yeah.
We all came prepared.
Yeah. What have you been listening to?
So as you may know, I write like one story a year because that's how much time
usually I have. About a diva.
Yes, usually
that's
about
true.
A solo
Kelly Clarkson
woman.
Hive stand up. Yeah. Sam Hunt, Kelly Clarkson. It's like right there.
No.
Right
no.
there.
Oh, come on.
For you?
For me.
Yeah,
for you. Yeah, for me.
He's Kelly above Clarkson. Her?
Yes.
No.
Kelly Clarkson Christmas album, though.
He's not. Okay.
All right.
We're not going to do that. But anyway, so I came prepared to talk about a woman.
Great.
Yes. All the blogs have been writing about her, so I'm sure you've all heard Blanchell by this point. Yes.
Yes, no. Blanchell. Yes. Blanchell reaction. Yes. No.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not there yet.
I feel like it's getting
cool. It's right on the. I feel like it's not there yet.
It is nearly engineered in a lab for like music critics in my demographic. As a young woman in her 20s.
What demographic would that be?
I can't even say.
Music critics wearing Operation Ivy t-shirts yes. to live podcast tapings. Yeah.
That demographic.
That's a very specific demographic.
So you might remember 5 years ago now, 2017, we did that package on how women are the future of rock. Do we remember
yes.
that?
Yeah. Who's been with us since the Girl Punk package?
Yeah.
Phenomenal. I think the Pellies were on that podcast.
Shout out Jen Pelly. Shout out Liz Pelly.
Oh, yeah. That was a great one.
Yeah.
Amazing project spearheaded by Joe, who got into contact with all of these artists and really made it happen. Then we had this magical day where we hung out with all of them. But anyway, the point of this is Blanchell would fit in perfectly in this package. So if you were looking for an aesthetic guidepost, her name is Sabrina Teitelbaum. She's in her mid-20s. She obviously listened to a lot of grunge and alt rock from the 90s, but her songs are not derivative. They're definitely just like, they bear the print, but they are not copycats. I'm going back to him. She had said she was listening to Hole's Doll Parts during it. And I was like, nah, it doesn't sound like that at all. What does it sound like? It sounds like Built to Spill, Carry the Zero. And then she covered that at her LA show. I saw it on Instagram. And I was like, this is exactly what it sounds like. All three songs she's put out so far are kind of mid-tempo to slow. It's kind of like it's a slow headbang. And it has like these chiming.
Big bridges,
chiming Built to Spill-y chorus pedal guitar thing happening, a little noodly stuff. But yeah,
her what's Built to Spill?
I knew you were going to say
Games
that.
Core.
I walked here, by the way, over the Williamsburg Bridge because I needed my 10,000 steps for the day.
Literal absolute
And
madness.
I was thinking about that song. And then, of course, I put on the Built to Spill album that it made me think of. And I was like, John is not going to like this.
My reference for Sepsis was Pinkerton. To me, there's a lot of Weezer in it, especially as it sort of builds. And just the specificity of her lyrics. It's like gender flip Pinkerton because Pinkerton, obviously, the Weezer album has aged very weirdly because of how strange Rivers considered women at that point in his life.
Rivers, huge podcast fan.
That's true.
Shout out to
Rivers Cuomo. Discord? Is anyone in the Discord? Apparently Rivers Cuomo is in the Discord. Yeah, okay. So Rivers, if you're listening, thank you for being in the Discord. I'm not really in the Discord.
And thank you for making Pinkerton because it was
which
yeah,
we
a
love.
Big album.
Great record.
Yes,
great
yes.
record.
No, but you're totally right. That's a great reference point.
About.
Yeah.
Built to Spill, that's like a fake band.
Oh but she's
that's like a band from
wait,
a TV
no,
show.
No, hang.
Real.
Built to Spill people.
Everybody can go home. Don't know you.
Rivers, I hope you're listening. When I went to interview him, the first thing he said to me was, do you know John Caramonica? And I was like,
does anyone really know John Caramonica? It's a Phenomenal question. It's existential. We don't know the
probably
answer.
No one better than Karen Gantz.
Sad but true.
Took me off guard. I said, I edit you. And he was like, what?
Wow. Big yes. facts.
Anyway, Blanchell is amazing. I expect there'll be an album. What do we expect next year?
I think early next year is the plan. Yeah.
You want to do one more before we?
Yeah.
What? Or let's do, what do you say? Issy
let's
or Central
about,
C?
Let's talk about rap.
Central C?
Yeah. And then okay. we'll do a great. Speed round.
All right, great. Central C. Who cares about the LA Leakers freestyle?
Just Dan.
Just Dan. Okay, but Dan, I
and
hate
Jason.
Jason, I hate to break it to you guys, but it is a Monkey version of Big L's Ebonics. It's not as good as everybody says it is. That said, Doja is a great song.
Doja? Okay, so
should we
Central
to,
C.
Should we listen to Doja?
Let's set it up for a second. We should tell people at least that he's British.
He is British.
Because not everyone's cool with that.
And who's on TikTok? I feel like everybody knows the lyric. Do I have to say it?
No, please don't.
Okay, I'm not going to say it, but you know the lyric.
I don't know what
that
it is.
Central
it's
C.
Uncouth.
It's un. It's. I'm,
is it unprintable in this paper?
That's a good question. Do you think we could get it into the New York Times?
Yes. I've gotten worse into the New York Times.
Somebody told Doja Cat that I'm trying to indulge in that. In my great tracksuit, see the bulging that. See the motion clap when you're throwing it back. These females planning on doing me wrong, so I'm grabbing a dome at the Trojan pack. Post a location after we're gone, can't slip and let them know where we're at. I don't know about you, but I value my life. Cause imagine I die, and I ain't made 100 M's yet. There's so much things I ain't done yet. Like f***ing a flight attendant. I don't party, but I heard Cardi there. So
Central C. Yes. Thank you. For Central, Pop Drill, Post Grime, incredible crossover artist in the UK who I think is probably going to have a relatively big US landing because of this big TikTok record, which is, you know, uncouth as in, that's a loose, not a, you know, I guess it's uncouth in that I'm being told I shouldn't say the lyrics.
Look, you can say whatever you want to say, but.
My biggest fear about the live podcast event was that we were going to self-cancel.
Shout out to Maddie Healy for the fridge. Oh, no, he was soft canceled.
He's soft canceled.
We're both soft. Yes. We're soft canceled and self canceled after this.
So I just want you to be careful.
So Central C is, I think, like a fairly nimble rapper, a pretty good songwriter, and also like, it seemed inevitable that kind of in the post Skepta, post Stormzy ecosystem that someone would come along and basically, dare I say, like thin out a little bit of that sound and make it incredibly palatable. And I feel like Central C has kind of like arrived into that moment pretty much fully formed.
One of the things that strikes me about Central C is that his two of his biggest hits so far do the thing that's really big on pop radio right now, which is a big, dumb sample. Like, oh, like, okay, yes, I know that song. I like that song. So therefore, I also like this song, you know, Jack Harlow, et cetera. The Retail Therapy is the same sample as Drive Slow. It's the same sample that Pac used at one point.
Young Gravy and Rick Astley.
Yeah, right. Young Gravy, Rick Astley. So he has a song called Retail Therapy.
That is Young Gravy's lone appearance on podcast. We'll never discuss him again.
Well, I was watching the VMAs and I had to text John, what's Young Gravy?
Incredible text.
I was not watching the VMAs.
Because he was there incredible text. Yeah.
Because he was there with
Addison Rae's mom.
Yes. Yeah. Literally.
Sherry, if you didn't know. I feel bad for Sherry. I hope that there is therapy happening in the Ray household. I'm very concerned. I'm concerned about Monty.
Poor Monty.
Yeah, like I'm like I feel bad. I genuinely feel bad.
We got some booze for Monty.
Yeah. No, he's going, look, the one thing that I've learned over the years is like anybody who you think is a villain on social media is really just going through it. Honestly. Now that doesn't mean that they're not doing villainous things. But they are going through it, so I hope that we can support Monty in his process of healing.
I'm not co-signing his behavior.
This is what you're getting canceled for. Yeah.
Monty's behavior is trash. I hope he gets help. That's all I have to say.
Okay, but the
Sherry
other,
too, low key.
The other Central C song, Doja, which we were just listening to, samples Eve and Gwen Stefani, Let Me Blow Your Mind, sped up. But even despite the sort of obviousness of the beats and the like, I'm going to appeal to millennials and old Gen Zers. Are there old Gen Zers? Is that a thing I can say? Yeah, other than John.
If you're an old Gen Zer like me, raise your hand. Okay.
He's still really good at rapping and making them his own song, which I feel like is a real accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's something not to be like something I would write, but like basically like the way that he clusters syllables is really good.
Something you would write.
It is something I would write. Yeah, but the way they cluster syllables is really good. It's they're really dense, but they're not unclear. Even with an American ear, they're not unclear.
And the freestyle John was referencing earlier
from the LA Leakers
is he's basically explaining British slang in rap form, like over a beat.
Faking like, flats.
Yeah, exactly. Saying like, you guys say whatever, we say whatever. I'm not going to.
It's like literally so unnecessary. It's not like his native language is French. It's not Hindi.
Right. We all, you know we've all mean? Seen like, Top it's Boy on Netflix.
Yeah, it's literally English. So anyway. That was unnecessary.
But it is in a hip hop tradition. You mentioned Big L.
Yeah, Big L Ebonics.
I don't know if you saw, I tweeted an obscure Dipset mixtape track where they do the same thing with Harlem slang, which is really, which I remember really liking when I was in college. And yeah, I feel like it's in a lineage, and then he immediately released it as like a single on streaming because it was going viral. But my favorite part about it going viral is that it's also subtitled while he's rapping the translations in his accent. It's subtitled like he's like a foreign character on a reality
That's
show.
What I'm saying. Like, he literally is speaking English. I want to emphasize that. He's literally speaking
English.
I
read the subtitles. I found it helpful.
I think we're going to bring the first half of the recording to a close, but do you want to just do like a quick... Do you want to do like a lightning round?
Yeah, we can name a couple other people who were on our ideas list.
Yeah, we had ideas. We came prepared. Issy Wood.
Yeah, so...
Wow.
Nice. So I wrote about this woman, Issy Wood. She's from South London. She's a famous painter. She's a figurative painter. She has a new show at Michael Werner Gallery if you want to go see some art.
That's where we're going afterwards.
Upper East Side. She makes these insane, both giant and tiny oil paintings, often on velvet. They're like weird zooms of gross shit, but also like there's a giant one of like a Mad Men screenshot. Very insane, very successful painter over the last few years. During the pandemic, right before the pandemic, started making weird, weird, weird little pop songs at her kitchen table after she comes home from her art studio. Was quickly discovered by Mark Ronson, tried to sign her, put out an EP. They fell out. She put out this album completely independently last month called My Body, Your Choice. It's just, she's another one similar to Blondshell, like just one of the best writers. She has these blogs. She's been keeping public blogs since she was a teenager. And yeah, her really raw stuff in the music, in the painting, in the writing. And she really puts it all together in a way like you don't see that many contemporary artists moving that seamlessly between mediums. And she's another one that I think is just, she can take her career in so many different directions. And music is clearly just a hobby for her.
and frankly, for many of the people we write about, yeah, if we're being honest.
but just an inspiring person to watch like grow up in public.
Also, just a quick note about the practice of journalism. I don't take email interviews. Like, I don't take quotes over email. I don't take email statements. I don't email people questions and get responses that are written by publicists because I know that they're not authentic and true. That said, Joe's story about Issy Wood, there is the single greatest email statement that I also would have
taken. It's up there. It's up there with the Joe Hagan one that just ran in the Yanyan Wenner interview, which
about
we
Jan
can talk
Wenner.
About too.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That was okay. A really good one.
I didn't
as well.
See it. Okay. So, Joe, do you want to tell the people what you were emailed by Mark Ronson?
I feel like I have to pull it up to get the exact quote. And then
it's
there's
so
another.
Good.
Did you see the other shoe that dropped over the weekend?
No.
All right.
Wow.
Okay. So she had a bad experience with Mark Ronson. She got herself out of her label deal. She was very open in our interview about how it was to work with Mark Ronson and how unfulfilling she found it. And so I had to run it all by him for comment because that's what we do at the New York Times.
Real journalism, folks. Real journalism. Live. That's right.
I had to do it. It matched a parallel situation in her art career. That was sort of the thrust of the piece. She said, quote, "He made sure I always knew he was doing me a favor, that he'd won an Oscar for his songwriting, and I very much hadn't." And we wrote, Ronson, in a brief statement, said, quote, "I have a different recollection of our professional history, but I wish her the best and the continued use of my HBO Max login."
And for like 30 seconds, Mark Ronson felt whole.
And then
it's good.
And it's really good.
It's a
very
really, good.
Really good.
Really
it's
good quote.
Good.
Good. It really cut the tension of whatever was going on between them. I was very happy with how it played out for both of them, and I felt like they really each got their say, right?
But then...
And then she posted on Instagram after the story came out.
Joe looking through his recents is hilarious.
She said she posted on her story, fact check, a text from Mark Ronson, I changed the password. Take care, though.
Mark Ronson really hit her with the be safe, though.
I mean,
just a brutal, genuinely unbelievable.
Just a brutal exchange. But I, all kidding aside, like I really respect an artist and a subject specifically in journalism who will speak their mind openly. Like we encounter it so infrequently at this point in celebrity journalism. So the fact that you know she said openly what her experience was in the music industry, I found to be quite admirable.
We're gonna play an Issy Wood song. Which one are we gonna play?
Play both.
I say this with affection, but the art's better. But that's cool. It's totally fine. You can be very good in one medium and sort of like good in another medium.
And sometimes John and Karen and I disagree, as you see.
Absolutely, totally fine. You're allowed, as this week on Twitter has taught us, Jason, it's okay to disagree with people on the internet. It's totally fine.
And it's really fun, actually.
It's actually fun. I really encourage everybody to disagree with someone in a respectful way. We are going to take a break, and we will be back for the firing round Q&A.
Yes, I keep busy, I'm best when I'm in the zone. You said you like that I'm busy cause it means I can hold my own. Let me have a go, let me have a go. Cause if you don't try, then you'll never know.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Okay, who has questions? Come to the mic.
Hey guys, I'm Garrett. I want to tell this story that like a month ago, I was walking through the East Village listening to Thankful by Kelly Clarkson, and I saw Karen, and I was
big.
I have been too scared to re-listen to it because I'm like, maybe she just appears whenever.
Wow.
That's a magical experience.
It was really weird.
Did you say hi?
No, I was like, well, you were like walking the opposite direction, and I was like, whoa.
Wow.
I was getting my 10,000 steps.
You summoned.
Wait,
you summoned.
You posted it on the Facebook.
Yes,
though, right?
I did. I was like, I have no one to tell about this.
I feel bad that I'll never see anything on the Facebook, but they'll tell me.
Karen's not on Facebook.
I've never joined Facebook, so I can't. It's a thing. I did a story in 2003-4 for the New York Post about Friendster and how it was like cool to not join Friendster. And then when Facebook arrived, I was like, well, I have to just keep it going.
My version of that is that I've never accepted John's Facebook.
You really gonna do this? Yeah.
I think I look every now and then. I think it's like 8 years ago.
No, it's more. It's actually, okay, so I was looking. You had favorited someone's comment in the Facebook group that I was looking at today. And it was like, you know, like add friend.
Requested. I just think it's a funny bit. Anyway, Garrett, go ahead.
It's incredible. It's the second funniest recurring bit in my and Joe's friendship. And I will not tell you what the first one is.
John, we have to talk about Puth. Okay.
Boy, do we. That's right. That's right.
I have a lot of thoughts, as I'm sure everyone does, but like one specifically, I think how he approaches TikTok, considering he's not native to TikTok, is actually interesting compared to how like Taylor Swift or like the Jonas Brothers approach TikTok, or I don't know, Shawn Mendes or whatever. And then
is Shawn Mendes on TikTok?
I'm sure. Like,
I'm serious question.
Isn't he taking a mental health break?
From TikTok?
Yeah, I mean, like,
from his tour.
From his tour. taking a sales break from his tour.
And also, the music is not as good as voice notes. So I'm just curious your thoughts on Puth as a whole.
This is maybe like beyond the bounds of like acceptable critical discourse, right?
You're going to talk about Puth's butt?
Yeah, actually, yes. Okay. My sense, so I interviewed Charlie Puth on in the voice notes era, and obviously have kept a close eye on him as Joe has indicated.
Sure.
Yes, obviously. I feel like based on my conversation with him in that time and based on what we're seeing in the world right now, he seems extremely vulnerable to having his heart broken. Like he seems like he lays himself out and gets kind of like spanked for it. And I feel like a lot of what I'm seeing on TikTok and a lot of what I'm seeing in those photos, no comment, a lot of what I'm seeing in those photos is kind of the behavior of a person who is not necessarily thinking about his marketing plan as much as he's expressing an internal emotional need.
I like that Joey shaking his head.
You're not with it.
I've never believed Puth. I've always said, I'm sure I've said it on podcasts, give Puth's songs to Zayn. And the world wow. can be a happy place.
First of all, I would say give Harry songs to Zayn, but Harry has no songs. So
facts.
So that's not going to work.
I think we just lost half the audience, yeah. but you know I'm with you on that one.
I've lost much more than that, I'll tell you that, with my Harry Styles positions. But, okay, real talk, though, you think, and this is no shot on Zayn, who I really, really like, but you think Zayn actually could carry the best
Puth
songs?
I just want anyone but Puth to be singing Puth songs because I just don't believe him as a celebrity, as a musician, as a TikToker. I just don't like the guy. Leave us alone. I'm sure he's a nice dude. I mean, as a celeb and as a musician.
He would be sitting here and telling you what notes you were hitting.
I don't like that either.
He'd say which key you were speaking in.
Diary of a Song needs an interlocutor, not just Puth telling us about music.
Wow. Okay, so you heard it here first. Charlie Puth will never appear on Diary of a Song. I'm so sorry. I guess the distilled version is I'm concerned. I believe, but I'm concerned. Karen,
how much time are we going to devote to Puth?
Too much.
I say keep it going.
Fine. Next.
I like the question.
We've been gams.
Thank you. You guys are great.
Hi. Thank you. Long time listener.
What's your name?
Caller. Brianna.
Great. Hi.
Nice to meet you all.
Likewise.
All right. I would love to know your thoughts on what direction and genre we think Midnights is going.
I can't believe this is the second question and not the first question.
Thank you. I can't believe
y'all did not like storm us in the beginning. I'm gonna take a backseat on this one. I would love to hear Karen.
Karen, Midnight's prediction. Taylor Swift,
plural.
October 21st.
Plural.
I feel like it's not going to be like the last two. I don't think
Thank
it's
going to. Thank God.
Yes.
You think?
On God. I mean, again. On God and
which
God.
I will admit grew on me a little bit, but not a lot.
Look, I mean, these people, hopefully you've listened to the episodes. These people are ridiculous. Obviously, folklore is good. Moving on. Yeah,
parts of it are great.
Joe, yes. This is going to come up on your performance review.
Yeah. But Joe, I believe you told me, you were the one who mentioned the rumor that maybe this is the Taylor Works with Women moment.
It has been rumored. Yeah. We don't know anything about this, but it has been rumored that she will be working with women, which she has rarely done in her career, especially since Liz Rose got put out to pasture.
Too bad. R.I.P. Great era. Great.
I mean,
bring it back.
Some of the best Taylor songs co-written with Liz Rose. Would you want that, right?
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine with me.
And I think, you know, we saw some of that in the re-records bonus tracks, whatever, working with Phoebe or, you know, a couple. Who are the others in that mix? Marin, yeah. So
you mean these kind of like afterthought records where she's like, "That's cute, you can be on this."
But you know,
with Phoebe is great.
The song with Phoebe is really good. She often teases what she's going to do next in these sort of in between steps.
Yes.
So I would not be surprised if that's the case.
Have you taken a Ouija board to any of the Midnight's artwork just to see if there's hidden meanings in any of it? I have not yet.
I'm not an Easter egg girl, but I will say,
yeah.
I'm assuming this is an obvious answer. You guys might agree. It's a direct response. We know Taylor's looking online, and all anyone can talk about online is she doesn't work with women a lot.
Yeah.
So I think that's a safe bet, and I'd love to hear it. So let's all pray.
I hope.
And from a genre perspective, Like Aaron Dessner, quiet. It's over.
You think?
Better be.
I
back to the farm.
I think it's
back to the farm.
I think Aaron it's in between.
Follow up. Follow up.
Yeah.
What women?
Like who we'd want?
Oh,
or
someone
who
said
it will
Muna.
Be.
Wow. Someone's
Muna.
That's what wow. The crowd says.
Because the woman.
Kaler.
Like,
Kaler. We on the Kaler
genre.
That's not coming
I,
back.
Honestly, I have not even let myself think about it yet. We're going to talk about it as soon as possible.
Of course.
We're going to,
we just haven't mentally shifted there
yet.
It's
been a long summer. We're not in Midnight's era just yet at PopCap.
But I like the conceit.
Yeah, I think the middle of the night songs, I mean, maybe it's ballady. I don't know. I'd be fine
with
that.
No, I don't
think
it's
ballady.
It sounds
like a future record. Like, it's not a conceit. It's half cooked. But the truth remains, like, I feel like critically, the less I think about it before it comes, the better.
Yeah,
because I need to be open to whatever it is.
We try to receive it.
Yeah, I need to receive it as pure as possible. So I don't know. I wish to not know. If you have theories, you can tell Joe.
Okay, final question, then I'll sit down. Can you each just name what women you hope it is?
I have no hope.
Liz Rose.
Yes.
Lana. From a right.
Would approve.
Yeah.
Would approve.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
Apple
you.
King.
but what if?
But what if, yeah.
I was going to ask about Charlie Puth.
What?
I really one
two
Puth,
but one Swift. Okay. What's your name?
I'm Kennedy.
Hi, Kennedy.
From Memphis.
Hey.
That's Memphis. Oh, we were going to talk about Glorilla.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Glorilla.
She was in our
list. She was on our
list. She was on our list. Sorry we didn't get to Glorilla.
Glorilla.
Go listen to all those songs.
Go listen to F and F, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But John, I wanted to know. I know you just interviewed Moneybagg.
Yeah.
Where did you go? What did you eat?
Yeah. So I went to, is it Central Barbecue?
Yeah.
You don't like it?
It's okay.
To be honest, we were in a really tight time window, and the barbecue places that were closest to the hotel that I was staying were not, like, affirmatively not good. I feel like if I had had, like, 3 hours to go out to, like, some shack in the middle of nowhere, like, that would have been phenomenal, but I only had, like, 90 minutes. Well, so we just had to go in now. But if you have recommendations, I hope to go back.
I was going to say, like, people don't even know how much this is a part of our actual journalistic process, is what we have eaten and where.
Finding good restaurants on the road.
Absolutely
yeah,
true.
Everywhere.
Absolutely true. I mean, I'm very careful about restaurants, but the Memphis trip was booked relatively short notice, and I was only in the city for 22 hours. Like, it was almost no time.
Okay.
So, but if you have recommendations, I will go back to Memphis for sure.
If anybody wants to go to Memphis.
Wow. PopCast Memphis?
Let's go.
That literally every block in Memphis is like a museum of some music.
You said it, not me.
It's true, though. Like, I don't know if that's good or bad. It just is.
I think it's
every corner I turned to was a museum.
What do you think of Memphis's influence overall? Because Beyonce started with the Princess Loco sample.
Mm-hmm. You mean like in the current moment or like
pop?
Broadly construed?
Or both.
To me, I feel like it's not as strong as it could be.
Agreed.
Like when I think, like even like, for example, like UGK is very important to me, and their era compatriots, 8Ball and MJG. I love to get shamed. UGK is very important to me, but their era compatriots, 8Ball and MJG, to me are almost, if not as good, but don't get the same level of shine and sort of like that historical arc. But obviously like post 3-6 Mafia. Tremendous, like that. But
tremendous.
Here's the thing that I find most shocking, and shout out my guy BMI, who's from Memphis, who had been insisting that I really, really embrace Yo Gotti for years and years and years, right? Yes. And I want to be honest and say I was a little bit resistant. I didn't love it, didn't love the lyricism.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, that's fine. Look, we're here to be vulnerable. We're here to share true things, even if they're hard.
Okay.
I went to Birthday Bash and watching Yo Gotti perform what to me are like affirmatively regional hits in a room where 20,000 people know every word kind of like cracks your brain a little bit, especially just being like a humble boy from Brooklyn. Yeah. So I think it should be bigger than it is.
And the label's on fire has to be said. Gotti is like really bringing a lot of talent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whether it's Glorilla or ESTG. You know.
ESTG, not from Memphis.
No, but on the label.
Yes. Quick timeout. What's up?
No, I have a follow-up.
Oh, you have a question. Oh, I thought you were like kicking us out.
It's his
place.
No, so
hell
it's
no.
His place. I'm sorry.
I'm not going to kick you out.
Oh, thank
ever.
God. What's up?
Well, she was talking about food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I happen to run a restaurant.
Big facts.
Big facts. So I wanted to ask a question. How important, and if you can, because I know you are intellectuals, provide references in songs or with musical artists of really important food moments. And I know you like snacks too. So
right, but not Action Bronson.
Not
like beyond
please,
Action Bronson.
What about Doom?
Doom is a huge one. But as you are answering the question, also because I was promised knowledge on snacks.
Yeah, that's true. That wasn't the description. I do want to be honest. That wasn't
I want to know number one favorite snack as you answer the question.
Man,
and
this is
and this is to all three of you.
Yeah,
I mean,
tough.
The quickest link I can do here to answer this question, Hot Cheetos and Takis. I mean, a classic song, classic viral moment, classic snack. I'm a big snacker, as we all are. Spicier the better. Tapatio Doritos, my favorite chip, followed closely by Zaps. Voodoo Hot.
Yeah.
Voodoo Hot.
Can't do it.
These guys don't do spicy.
I have a weak stomach.
But I am currently taking the month off of snacking. I'm going through it.
We're proud of Joe.
Yes.
We're supporting him in his journey.
Isn't he glowing?
He's glowing.
He true. Looks so good.
The fact is, when you stop eating like a 7-year-old, yeah, you feel much better.
I wouldn't know. I've been eating like a 9-year-old since I was 9, so I wouldn't know that.
Food moment?
Yeah.
Well, that just brings us to, I just wanted to mention the opening of the show.
Oh, yes. John and I learned a disturbing fact about Karen.
I can't even...
Recently.
I need to take a walk.
Yesterday.
It's not disturbing
which
at all.
Which is that Karen starts her morning, every morning.
Every morning.
For her whole life.
For her whole life.
With...
a glass of chocolate milk.
No, but then...
No way!
Why is that weird? Yeah.
Can we get the full detail?
I make it myself. Everyone is like disturbed.
So she takes whole milk.
Whole...
No, it's 2%.
2%.
Oh yeah. My God. It's 2%.
Yeah.
Pours it into a glass. Always a glass or sometimes like a cup?
A plastic cup? No, always a glass.
Always a glass.
Yeah, it's like a pint glass.
And then...
Hershey's chocolate syrup.
Wow. So here at Gertie,
yeah,
we use You Bet
okay.
chocolate syrup.
I was going to bring that up because during the pandemic, I couldn't get anything but You Bet.
It's better than
and
Hershey.
I developed a little bit of a taste for it.
I got to be honest. I didn't think I could be more scandalized than I was learning that this was a thing you did. But now knowing it's 2% and not whole.
Whole is very thick.
Boy, is it.
Yes.
It's type thick, as it should be.
We were on FaceTime, and they were so scandalized by this. I didn't understand
the
it.
Last
I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight.
The last thing I want to say on Milkgate.
I know this is going as long as Puth. I apologize.
Is that Karen does this for her health.
I told them yes, because as a woman,
so
are we
not I'm
concerned
not
about
this.
Osteoporosis? Vitamin D. I think these are important things.
She doesn't like milk plain.
No, I
did
I don't
ask
like
for
it.
A musical reference.
Yeah, do you got a musical reference? A chocolate
this is, snacks.
You opened up a
Fergie
wound.
Milk's yeah, money.
You opened up a wound.
What's
like
the,
that's all I have
there's
right
like
now.
A Rufus Wainwright song about chocolate milk.
I'm not a fan of Rufus Wainwright.
Me either.
Me neither.
Snack?
Yeah, okay. So,
then we'll move on.
First of all, in the Zaps family, I'm strictly regular flavor because my stomach is weak. Anybody had Caramel Bugles in here? Let's fucking go.
Some groans in the audience.
Let's fucking go. I'm sorry. If you are not with me at 7-Eleven at 2 a.m. picking up a sack of Caramel Bugles, like, truly, where are you at? Because that is the only happy place.
Well, hold on a second. The chocolate milk scandalized you.
Thank you.
Yes.
But Caramel Bugles are fine.
Dog, I'll knock down a sack right now. Absolutely. Let's go to the corner. Let's do it. Okay. This is chocolate, 2% handmade artisanal chocolate. I'm so sorry. As far as food references in food, I mean, obviously, I think very fondly of Doom, obviously, but it's hard to have that conversation without talking about Action Bronson, who also name checked me in a song once, but that happened, but that's all right.
Before a lot of y'all's time.
Wow. Before y'all were born, that happened. That was Nate, the odor of Gertie, who was interrogating us about snacks. And I'm just saying we all have love languages, and mine is caramel bugles. That's all. Next.
Hi there. My name is Natalie.
Hi, Natalie.
Super excited to be here. Thank you guys for doing this. I have a slightly selfish question.
Aren't they all? Totally fine.
Which is that, so as a Lana Del Rey stan of 10 years, and I was introduced actually to the podcast by the brilliant episode that you guys put out over the past New Year's. My favorite piece of Lana criticism to this day.
Mine too.
I listened to it more times than is, yeah.
Shout out Lindsay, shout out Mina. Big episode.
Yeah, really big great. Episode. Yes. So my selfish question is, as professional music critics, and as someone who's threatening sometimes to get a subtle Lana Del Rey tribute tattoo next month, will I regret that decision?
No. First of all, I probably should get a Lana Del Rey
tattoo. Joe is the only one qualified to answer because he's the only one that has possibly regrettable tattoos.
It's true. John and Karen.
No tattoos.
No tattoos.
No tattoos.
Good Jewish children.
Oh, it's not because of Judaism.
Oh, it's not?
No, they're just, I don't know if you know, but they're permanent.
I love they're my literally bad tattoos. There forever. I love my bad tattoos. Go nuts.
And I guess also maybe the question is more like, do you think...
What is it going to be?
Yes, what is Lana going to be?
In? No, what's the tattoo?
What is Lana going to be?
No, what's the tattoo? Is it like a lyric? Is it like a silhouette illustration?
No, subtle enough that like you wouldn't know that it's for Lana Del Rey if you just saw it, but it would be violets from Violets for Roses from Blue Bannisters, and then with butterflies from Happiness is a Butterfly off Norman effing Rockwell.
No, that sounds really nice.
Sounds great.
Yeah, you should do that.
Sounds great. Tag us.
Go.
Tag us.
Go.
Yeah.
Go. Have
You're
fun.
Of age, right? You're of age. You can legally get a tattoo. Yes, we don't want to encourage anybody who's not of age.
No, get underage tattoos.
Cool.
And then...
Cancel me.
Finally.
And I guess like more philosophically, like, do you think that she's able to make a return post her like incredibly... cringy
cop
questions
dating era?
For the culture era? Like, do you think she can ever get back what she had with Norman effing Rockwell?
First of all, if she's making music with my boy from Salem, it's going to be nothing but smangers. Absolutely nothing but smangers. It's 100% a hit if that's where it's going.
I think with Lana, like, and we've talked about this on podcast many times, like, you're just along for the ride now, right? Like, she's a career artist. She's going to be making these weird albums for all of time. Like, who knows what they're going to sound like? I don't think you're going to get Norman Rockwell again. Like, I don't think you're going to get Ultraviolence again. You know, like, it's just, you just, whatever. It's Dylan. Like, you're along for the ride. Just roll.
Oh.
I mean in terms of fandom.
Someone has to stand up for the integrity and sanctity of Bob Dylan.
I mean in terms of fandom.
Yes, okay.
I did.
We needed an adult.
Then where are they?
Yeah. I think JP would not be mad that I said that.
I actually agree with you. A Dylan, a Lana, a Kanye. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Sighs off mic.
Hi, my name is Matthew. Thank you so much. This is really cool. I wanted to check in about the Gunna Young Thug RICO case. It seems that just thinking about rap on trial, when Meek Mill was in trouble, obviously like Jay-Z came through with an op-ed, even like, though it wasn't rap on trial, other rappers getting in a lot of trouble, like 21 Savage, it seemed like a lot of people flocked to them. And there was a lot of people just like, saying things all the time, in that world. And, obviously Drake has had like a few, you know, free YSL moments, but it feels like there's less happening, in the rap world, or maybe at least what I'm paying attention to. I'm just wondering your take on why it's not getting the same type of attention.
I think it's a reflection of the scope and seriousness of the case. I think it's very complicated. You're seeing the true power of the state, the expanded use of RICO law, which, you know, was started to take down the mafia. Like, the, you know, I think it's, there's a lot to be untangled, and I think it's going to take a really long time. That said, you know, if you've tuned in any of like the bond hearings or seen the coverage, like, you know, Kevin Lyles, who ran 300, where Thug and Gunna were signed and the YSL deal is, like, he testified on their behalf. You know, they've circulated petitions. There's some of it. I think, you know, you've seen it a little bit at Rolling Loud here and there. But I think it's just really, really, really complex. And it's hard for people to wrap their brains around. And I think it's going to take a long time to sort out. And yeah, it's going to be a long haul for Thug and Gunna and the rest of YSL.
Can I just add one thing, which is those of us who care tremendously about hip hop, write about it extensively, have been writing about it for a long time, understand that Atlanta is the functional center of hip hop. Mm-hmm. What Atlanta is not is the functional center of media, and not in these worlds. So when you talk about Jay-Z and Meek Mill, the reason that Jay-Z gets a tremendous amount of attention is because he is a well-known figure in conventional media circles and is able to aggregate a lot of attention, eyeballs and ears to whatever he's talking about. And he even talked about the Meek Mill situation on this Khaled verse about how Meek's mad at him. And he's like, I basically got him out of a whole bit. But Jay-Z, when Jay-Z talks, a lot of people are inclined to listen. Atlanta, for all its global power, and I feel this a lot when I go there, and I imagine you do too, there is something that feels a little bit closed circle about it. These are people collaborating largely within their circles, not necessarily doing loads of interviews, even on the best of days, not necessarily doing loads of interviews with the mainstream media. And so where you would ordinarily see people talking about it or seeking to defend them, those spaces, I think, are not as plugged in to the specifics of Atlanta.
I think that's spot on. And yeah, if you want to know more about the complexities of modern Atlanta,
right. Talk that talk.
I will plug my book, Rap Capital.
I was going to do it for you. But
thanks, Garrett.
Did you pay this guy?
No, but it's you know, it's not about Thug and YSL directly, but it's about a lot of these issues.
Yeah.
And I did just read it, and it's amazing. That's awesome.
All right. Hello. My name is also John.
Hey.
Hey. So this is a super like meta question. How long do you think trap will continue to be the dominant sound in hip hop? And do you think drill will ever have the same type of crossover?
I don't think trap is currently the dominant sound of hip hop anymore. I do think it's drill. I think the challenge for drill right now is it feels like almost like dispositionally opposed to melody. And this is something that's a real struggle. And I think, you know, part of the reason I like Bandman Rill and guys like that is I feel like they're playing with melody a little bit, trying to find pockets. I don't think it's there yet. I think we're very much in a kind of interregnum between the peak of trap and like whatever drill is going to become. I don't think we've arrived at the drill thing. I'm waiting for a producer to figure it out. Like, obviously a lot of people talk about Cash Cobain with the sample drill and so on and so forth. That's like a step in the right direction, but it doesn't feel like the ending place. Some kid, some 16-year-old somewhere is about to figure it out. And I'm like really looking forward to that, but I don't think it's there yet.
And the loss of Pop Smoke, obviously. Like, yeah. There's not the mainstream emissary yet, right? There's no star.
Yeah, like even the post Pop Smoke New York guys, like, you know, 5-Yo, fine, but not the guy. I think we're waiting. Sort of like why I'm kind of excited by Ice Spice, because you can kind of see it potentially becoming a thing. But I think it's really a production question at this point.
And the question is also if drill is flexible enough to withstand the sort of popification of it, right?
In
the way
Alicia Keys,
right? I mean, in the way that trap was so malleable that it was able to be used across genres by so many different artists, from electronic dance music to Ariana Grande. And it's an open question, I think, whether drill is usable in that way.
And also, I think another kind of fundamental difference between like trap like in a definitional sense between trap and drill, is trap always felt a tiny bit more attached, like a very particular texture. And drill does feel like maybe it's maybe a little bit more of an attitude on top of a texture. So it has, I think, broader possibilities. I always felt like, even like using trap in the Moneybagg Yo headline, like obviously it makes sense, but I was kind of like, maybe let's just not do this anymore. You know, like it feels like that moment, that arc is over.
And we're talking mostly about sound, but when you think of those words, they also come from subject matter, right? So whatever you think of the way that trap has traveled, actual trap is about trapping and actual drill is about drilling. So I don't know.
Yeah, I meant more so like in the instrumentation.
That's how it feels, yeah.
Yeah. Also Bad Bunny episode one.
Yeah, I think end of the year probably. I think, I mean, it's just like...
long overdue.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such, it's so obvious that it's the dominant thing of the year. And I feel like maybe it'll probably be a year-end episode, kind of a retrospective thing. I was very sad to miss the Yankee Stadium shows. Really, really sad. Really sad.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. My name's Alex.
Hey.
Big thank you for doing this. Really
thank awesome. You.
I wrote down my question so I don't forget it, but great. It has to do, it's a little bit of a two-parter, has to do with vinyl. Vinyl resurgence is everywhere, and naturally physical music is competing with streaming, but will probably never be the physical form again. However, what do you guys think about the resurgence of vinyl and artists coming out with upwards of 15 different variants for the same album?
Scammers.
Is it coming with good intention? Is it competing for scammers. Fan attention? And going off of that, Spotify, Urban, Target always get exclusive pressings, but Spotify being a unique one as a streamer itself, what do you see about the potential of streamers opening up physical retail stores in major cities to have mini record stores?
Is that real? Spotify has pressings?
No, I thought of this today during my work.
Oh, no, but you said, were you saying there were Spotify pressings of...
exclusive Spotify pressings.
Seriously?
A major retailer will get one also. They're usually y'all up on in this? Limited quantities. But
truly no idea.
The same way that Apple already owns physical retail stores, if they put a little corner and made it an Apple Music exclusive, gave a free month of Apple Music to someone who buys the record, is there potential for that?
Quickly, your favorite artists are scamming you.
Yeah.
They're charging you $37.99 for like red vinyl and black vinyl and blue vinyl.
I would love to know what percentage of people are listening to their vinyl.
It's merch. It's souvenir. Fetish objects. It's souvenir. Yeah.
I want to just push back for 1 second because I feel that and I don't like anything that you're talking about. It really upsets me.
Hate it all.
But on the flip side, I think it's okay for people to want to collect things from their favorite artists.
No.
Like it's
no. Like, I can't imagine.
It's a radical no. idea.
And I say that as somebody who is not a collector of things, and you say this as somebody who is. So I get the impulse to want to own this stuff, even if you don't want to listen to it. And I think it's fine. It's a poster. It's a beautiful object. It's money in the pocket of the artist you care about. I get all of that stuff, but it really has gone too far.
No, I was going to say, it's fine to have a vinyl copy of your record, but when you're trying to scam the charts by having 15 versions, I think that's ridiculous.
Shout out Ben Cesario.
Yeah. I know.
We miss Ben.
We miss Ben.
But yeah, everybody
Ben
does
right
it.
Now, like his ears are ringing. He's like, someone's talking about bundling.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He also did that great story on vinyl last year, which had a headline that was really loved internally at the New York Times that I did not write, that was like, vinyl is selling so well that it's impossible to get vinyl. And I believe I was told the other day that Taylor, in preparation for her album, has bought up so much of the vinyl that a lot of other artists have been suffering.
Which happens all the time.
Yes. Yeah,
it happened with Adele. It happened with Beyonce, yeah. Et
cetera. Just wanted to bring it back to Taylor for you.
Yes.
we hate it. Hate it.
Yeah.
Hated it. That's it. I don't have anything more to say. Like, genuinely, like, obviously, I'm a collector in various forms and various stages of mental health. A collector. And even I am looking at like 7 different versions of a vinyl album and just be like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Who's this for? It's literally just so that incredibly motivated stans will buy multiple copies to boost chart position for their preferred artists.
But what's the longevity there?
In terms of like the medium?
A lot of these are coming out specifically for release week and then you see the charts boom with them.
Right. No, there's no
a huge decline.
No longevity.
But the vinyl market continues to grow.
I think people
a lot of that's catalog too. Also, yeah, a lot of it's catalog.
But as things become more and more ephemeral, right? Only on Spotify, only on YouTube, whatever. I think people will still want to own a piece of their favorite artists. Yeah. So I think that's what we're seeing, and I think that has some legs.
Buy a bobblehead. You know what I mean? Like buy something fun. Buy a t-shirt.
Do you have vinyl, John?
Buy a Popcast t-shirt.
Yeah.
Don't buy Blackpink vinyl. Buy a Popcast
John,
t-shirt.
Do you in your John has a lot of stuff. Do you have vinyl? That's one thing I never noticed.
I got rid of, let's say, 3/4 of my vinyl when I moved to my current apartment. I maintain, let's say I've got like 500 pieces of vinyl. Maybe.
Okay, that's
maybe
still
like
a lot.
500. But I used to have like 5,000, you know? So, you know, some lucky kid in the record store or discogs.com, you know, gets all that.
Joe, do you own any vinyl?
Yeah, I have my high school. I have like Against Me 7 Inches from No Idea Records.
Salute.
Awesome. Thanks,
thank
Alex.
You. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Eamon. I have a Cardi B question.
Nice. That's
since
right.
It's been about 4 years since Invasion of Privacy. What can we expect
she's
from
post album? She doesn't need an
doesn't
album.
Need an album.
Yeah, does her sophomore album even matter, or what can it be to be successful since her debut was so varied and frankly excellent? What can we expect
that's
from
right.
her sophomore?
Speak up for Invasion of Privacy. Invasion of Privacy, what was that? The 13th best record on the Rolling Stone list?
Of all time.
Of all time.
Yeah.
I like that record a lot. I am not under the illusion it was whatever place it was on that list, but no shots on Cardi. It's a very good record. Karen, what do you think?
No, I think the album is coming and I think it's going to be an album. I think she's actually, we've talked about this. That she's like such a more traditional minded artist than people think she is.
Think she is, yeah. Because of her background and yeah. Because of like the scenes in which she comes from. But yeah, I agree. She's I find her to be like almost like just like a classic New York rapper.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think she's in a way because of still kind of getting over the light retroactive stigma of like wasn't a rapper and then started putting out rap songs. I do tend to think her rollout strategies lean a little bit more traditional in my mind. And so I imagine we're maybe soon to be on the verge of a semi-traditional album rollout.
But if not,
that's
who
fine.
Cares?
Literally
right?
Doesn't
like
matter.
One world-beating single a year or two, it's like, and the celebrity, which obviously is such a big part of her appeal, her
rapping
charm.
Ice, like pleading guilty in court, getting a 15-day community service sentence, getting in the car, an incredible white dress, rapping Ice Spice. I'm good for a month.
Yeah, that's an album.
I'm literally good for a month.
So actually, so much of her Instagram is food focused. I feel like she really
food.
Does fit our mold.
Cardi, come on podcast. Though.
Yeah.
Real talk. Yeah. She, one of the only artists, we don't have artists on podcasts, as you guys know. One of the only artists I would even entertain having
oh,
is
yeah.
Cardi.
She could do whatever she wants.
Absolutely. She's your new host. Podcast live with Cardi.
Standard desk is sweating.
Yes, real talk.
And unrelated, I'm from the same hometown as Charlie Puth, and I agree, send all of his songs to Zane.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Third
mic drop.
Puth
free
thing.
Zane.
Damn. Poor Zane. Seriously.
Will Zane ever make another record?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Hey, guys.
We'll get a Lewis Tomlinson record before we get a Zane record, and I am sorry for that.
So my name is Matt, and I have a bit more of a personal question for you guys. Whew. So you guys,
good luck
with
that.
It's hard to imagine, but at some point you guys were new because of how good you guys are at music criticism, etc. You were new to it all. I'm curious if you guys have a project, an article, or something that you guys remember from when you guys were getting started that like really got you guys just psyched about music criticism, music writing, etc. That you like go back to that you remember that was like, man, that was awesome. I'm in. Let's keep doing this.
Okay, so when I started writing with any regularity, it was in the late 1990s, a century ago. I was writing for a magazine called Trace, which was like a British vibe, but like more fashionable. And I was like one of only two Americans who were, I was living in London at the time. Everybody take a shot. take a shot.
We did it.
You thought we'd make it this far? Anyway. I was living in London. I was one of only maybe two Americans that were writing for the magazine. And I wrote the two things that are really sticking in my mind. In like week number two of me writing for Trace, they sent me to interview Missy Elliott right when she was really popping. And I went to like the fanciest hotel room maybe I still have ever been in. And it was unreal. And she barely granted me any time. And I left the hotel room and I was like, this is what I'm going to do. Like this, that was awful and terrible, and I was bad at it. But I was like, this, I'm going to figure this out. The other thing, and I was reminded of this recently, in like maybe the third issue of Trace that I wrote for, I wrote a piece about, LOL, the death of hip-hop journalism, which is a perennial topic, and this came up a few weeks ago on Popcast when we had Andre and Rob and Jerry talking about the gossipification of hip hop media. These battles that we've been fighting are cyclical, and we have been fighting them for years and years and decades and generations. And I went back and I reread that piece, and 90% of it, 80% of it is probably valid today. And I remember at the time thinking, I really did something and things would change. And then of course they didn't, but it's okay. Cause somehow here we are, we have podcast. So that's fine.
That's pretty good.
Thanks.
My first feature at Spin was Danger Mouse when the Gray album came out. Oh, yeah. And that was like exceptionally exciting. They had never let me do anything before, really, over like 200 words. And I got to fly to LA. This was exciting, but we didn't have any money. So I had to stop in Atlanta and I got stuck there on the way back.
But
it really was amazing. It was like back when we'd say how it's so rare that an artist speaks like candidly in an interview. It's also exceptionally rare to have access anymore. And I basically went and hung out with Brian for like three straight days. And I was just like in his house in Los Feliz, where I had never been before. Oh my God, this was really fun. It's also really cool when they let you go to the photo shoot and the photo shoot is actually good. And we had done something where we got black mice and white mice. Do you not know this?
Oh, I have no visual.
There's a photo with
that.
Like a little mouse.
I remember your literal.
Remember your story was good. The reason I remember that is because I think the Gray album is corny. And I remember reading
it. I loved it. I was so excited.
I remember being like, oh, someone wrote a good story about this thing that I think is not good.
We were vaguely knew each other. It was really, really exciting. The bad ending of the mouse story was he kept them from the photo shoot and he got really excited. We went to Petco. We bought them like a little house and everything. And then a week later, one of them ate the other one. And his publicist called me and said he was traumatized. And
that's a metaphor about music.
Yeah. I know. I felt so, so bad. But anyway,
one is Jay-Z and which one's the Beatles?
But yeah, you know, he was like, this is my bedroom where I made the Gray album. And it was wildly exciting to actually see something where it happened and be able to tell the story. And I was like, okay, now I can. And that someone had let me write it. Yeah. And I was like, I hope people keep letting me write things. And now that's why I assign them to myself.
One of the first things I ever sold on eBay was the Gray album.
I have my copy. You sold yours. They're numbered. He knows.
Sorry.
Most of my early journalism was not music related, which I think
Joey blogs,
which I think is important for
Joe Coscarelli invented blogging.
That's
true. I want you guys to know.
I am not a music critic. I'm the music reporter. I don't have any opinions about music.
He has so many critical tendencies.
Not one.
I have critical tendencies, but I grew up reading Karen and John and many other people who I've now
call us old.
Had the pleasure to work
so
with.
Rude. So rude.
But I think it's important that I came to music journalism through journalism. So I learned how to report early. And
as your editor, that is important.
Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
So yeah, like, you know, I had two early Village Voice cover stories in my career. One about a guy selling heroin on Craigslist that I wrote with my friend David. And one about gossip in New York with my friend Foster, who's in the back there. In
fact, money.
And yeah, so that is really like where my love of journalism comes from. And I like that I can apply it to the music industry, which is so opaque to most people.
See, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Sorry, I know this is so long.
No. What's your name?
Tommy.
Hi,
nice
Tommy.
Nice to meet you guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's who called your shirt mid.
Oh, word?
His word's not mine.
What's your question, Tommy?
So this is kind of maybe a Karen question, a process question. So it's your job, in my understanding, all of you, generally, to like chronicle pop music evolution. And there are obviously tons of great albums that come out every year, all the time. And like, you have to leave so many of them behind and not talk about them. Can you speak to that in some way in terms of like, you know, what is an album by someone who is really not in touch with pop music in any way, but who puts out a great record and is like worth talking about in the New York Times in such a small space?
I think one of the unique things about our coverage is that like we do talk about things like that because it is very critic driven. So if John or Gio, our jazz critic, wants to write about something, they just will. Like, it's really exceptionally rare that I'd be like, we're not going to write about this. But in terms of like figuring out what from the vast scope we're going to cover, it's like, we do have to be selective because we're not a blog. And you know, like Rolling Stone or...
And there's very few of us.
Yeah. I was going to say like, it's a, we don't do a volume game, you know, like all music journalism has almost become, you know, it's like content wars. It's like, you have to have 50 posts a day because somebody at that organization says you have to have 50 posts a day. That can be a mix of features or reviews or whatever. So they're putting up 50 things a day. We are like the exact opposite. And it's not like how little we can do. It's just like, how meaningful can it be? And we're so selective and we have all these internal rules, but they make sense. Like, we don't really profile people on back-to-back albums because like we just talked to them. How much could have possibly changed in this amount of time? A mid-career artist puts out an album. Are we going to review it? Only if it's spectacular, you know, or there's something really, really unique about it. Otherwise, we could put it on the playlist if we really want to talk about it and just sort of plant a little bit of a flag. But we are like very team driven. You know, like if one of us loves an album and we all hate it, if it's a critic, you could write about it. But if like we all kind of critically, there's a consensus, like this is actually poop, we're not going to write about it. Yes.
I think that
like,
we
are you trying to ask about Big Thief.
We do a lot. We try. I think we what we don't cover is often as important as what we do cover.
Yeah.
Sometimes things are overlooked.
Yeah.
I will just give like a special acknowledgement to John Perales, who has been doing this forever and and listens to everything. And like. No, like things don't fall through his cracks. Like, go back and read his end of year lists. You're going to find stuff that you've never seen written about in the New York Times or anywhere, but he finds a way to highlight stuff that is special to him. And
John Perales was the chief pop music critic in the New York Times since I was five. Five.
It's incredible.
And
I am
18,
I'm 18
off,
now, which is crazy.
Yeah.
It's a long stretch.
And he's consuming more than ever.
Unreal.
And really a forward-looking critic.
Unreal.
You know, you assume that, well, John was around when Woodstock happened. He's going to want to write about Woodstock. No, he does not.
No.
John wants to write about the like artist that I have not heard of yet. He's amazing.
The truth is like we have like running email threads and group chats. And Karen will like throw like the most arbitrary or weird things in there. And like, I'm always just like, like either I got to listen to this right now or thank God I've already listened to this. And also just to round out that question, I listen to 5 times as much as I write about, 10 times as much as I write about. I want to stop listening sometime. Like I need a break, but I listen to an insane amount of stuff. And so it's all up there, kind of like ready to be weaponized if it ever needs to be. But a lot of times I'm only one man with 10 fingers.
Last one. Let's get out of here. Right.
So I work at TikTok now with entertainment clients, and I literally downloaded TikTok because of John talking about it on podcast.
Amazing.
There you go.
Congrats.
Give a clap. Give a clap. Yeah. Shout out all our friends at TikTok.
Yeah, tell Leah and William we said
yeah,
what's up.
Yeah, shout out Jordan. Shout out Katie Gregson McLeod.
I have no friends at TikTok. What have I done wrong?
You're not living right. Yeah. You're not living right.
Yeah. So, hi, I'm Shivani. Question, 2 that are related to the same topic. 1, John, I know you have your ear to the ground around K-pop. I saw NCT127 and aESPA were shouted out in the end of your review. What do you think about the current acts that are doing really well? Do you see any with the potential to have a really big breakthrough here in the U.S.?
You mean like sub-Blackpink, like sub, like
yeah,
below
yeah,
that?
Yeah, sub-Blackpink and BTS. And 2nd, are you also going to go to the NCT127 show in Jersey?
I was thinking about it, but I think I'm out of town that weekend, unfortunately, or week or whatever it is. I have it on my calendar, but I actually don't think that I'm going to be there. Here's my real anxiety about a lot of the post-Blackpink stuff is I think there were these kind of collisions that were happening in K-pop, like in, you know, your G-Dragon era, 21, Big Bang, like that era, that felt so kind of like sui generis. And you're like, wow, I've never encountered this kind of like controlled chaos
before. Yeah, my OG groups were SHINee and SNSD, so like I've been around a while.
So you feel what I'm saying? But there were these moments where I was like, no American producer would do this. No American group would do this. How refreshing. And then I worry that that became calcified. And one of my real struggles with like the arc of Blackpink and even like Lisa solo stuff and whatnot is I'm worried that there's a limitation of ideas in terms of the music. And with a lot of the younger groups, you mentioned aespa, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I like aespa a lot, but I haven't quite encountered what the next idea is. I feel like there's a huge template and groups from 2 generations ago and now the current generation
are using that to tremendous effect. They're selling out big shows in America. You know, you can sell two nights at the Prudential Center, two nights at the Forum, and that counts as success. But there's something musically that feels a tiny bit stagnant. And I keep waiting. Now, I'm not listening as closely as I was 5 years ago, but I check in probably like once a month on like some random playlists and whatnot. Yeah. I'm stressed about it, to be honest. And I think like next week I'll be writing about Blackpink and the Girls' Generation album and maybe mentioning a couple of these other groups that I think you're alluding to. But I have an anxiety, to be honest about it.
Thanks.
Do you have an anxiety?
Well, yeah, especially as someone who's, like I said, I've been listening for like 10 years, so I definitely feel the same thing you're talking about, where something has stalled in the production.
It's fatigue. There's a fatigue there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Interesting to like hear that you're, as a critic's take, you're feeling the same
thing. It's really worrisome, to be honest, because I think when I think of like the raw talent in a group like Blackpink, right? Yeah. Like I'm like, oh, you can do like 20 different things than what you're doing. But instead, it's literally like four-bar rap, four-bar song, like four-bar singing, big build, short drop. You know, it's just like, it's condensed clutter, and it doesn't serve any of the individuals particularly well, which is why I think low-key, the solo stuff's not hitting. Damn, I'm getting
sad to end on
I'm
this
getting
note.
Soft canceled for that.
Let's drink some chocolate milk.
Yes. Well, okay, that is our show. Listen to every... Thank you. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com. Get in the Facebook group. Get in the Discord. I see Sam. I see Caleb. Say hi to Sam and Caleb in the back.
Thank you, guys.
There's other things I usually say that I'm forgetting right now. Our producer, live in the flesh, it's Pedro Rosado from Head Separate Media.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you to Gertie. Thank you to Nate. Thank you to Joe. Thank you to Karen. We appreciate y'all. We will be back next week. Not here, though.